Station Court of Appeal judges. There are three here today to say hello to us. You could probably all come to the desk if you'd like. Just a few short words from Deborah. You could, Judge Deborah Wilson, maybe you could be first. Just say your name and how much you love your job and how good of a job you're doing.
First of all, thank you.
Good afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members, for allowing us the opportunity to appear before you. My name is Deborah Wilson. I've been a member of the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals since March of 1991. Before that, I spent 5 years as a compensation judge at the Office of Administrative Hearings, and prior to that, 5 years in private practice as an attorney specializing in workers' compensation.
I think you're overqualified.
I didn't want to go that far.
Just kidding.
But I feel like I bring experience and skills to the job that have served me well. I've appreciated the years I've been allowed to serve and would hope to serve some additional years. But thank you.
Okay. Mr. Peterson, good morning.
Good afternoon. Peterson, thank you,
Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Bill Peterson. I've been on the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals since August of 1998. I was reappointed in 2004 and again in 2010, with your permission. Prior to being on the court, I practiced in the workers' compensation area for 23 years, primarily representing the employers and the business industry. Our group has kind of a collective experience of about 150 years of workers' compensation background, and just privileged to be a part of the group that I serve with.
Sir, David.
Good afternoon. My name is Dave Stoffren. I'm the junior person up here. I was appointed by Governor Ventura to fill the last few months of a term for us for a judge that left to go to the district court. I was appointed then by Governor Pawlenty to a full term in 2003 and reappointed this year. My practice before I was appointed was representing injured workers and workers' compensation claims, and I did that for about 25 years. What you have up here is, I think, the diversity we have on our court. Employees, attorney background, defense lawyer background, compensation judge background. And we bring those backgrounds and, I think, create decisions that the bar and people in the system recognize are fair to all parties and appropriate for the law.
Yeah, that's good. Any questions of the members of the Senate? Well, I've just heard a lot of good things about you folks, what you've been doing over the years, and I think it always gets down to what I think is a fairness situation that you're in and do what's right. And I think we'll take them, I'm not sure how to do this, so to make sure we'll take them one at a time, okay? And Senator Bonner, if you'd like to move Judge Deborah Wilson, is that correct?
Yes, I would, Mr. Chair.
Okay, any discussion on that one? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Michelle, would you like to take Judge William?
Peterson.
We have Petersons and Petersons and Sauce Paul are all over every block in town. So Senator Michelle will move the confirmation. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Perry, would you like to move the last one on the slate here? Appointed by Senator or by Plenty lately, How long ago? Okay. On that motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. You pass the committee. Now we have to take you to the floor, but I think we'll be all right. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Senator Bonif, do you? Senate file 2895.
Frederick said, amendment to this?
Welcome, Senator. And
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Explain the bill.
Yes, this is the advisory committee bill, and before I talk about the bill, I do have three amendments. I have the A5, which is an author's amendment, which is essentially technical changes. I have the A3 amendment, and I have the A4 amendment.
Okay. I discussed, hopefully, one of these with Senator Frederickson today.
Yeah, that would be the A4 amendment. That was
okay,
the situation.
Okay, I was looking for him, then somebody said you've got it for him. So
yes,
that's
I do. That's the bill that has to do with where the third party billing didn't recognize the 3M workers' leave of absence for what it was, and so they were going to have to pay back some unemployment benefits, and we certainly want to fix that. Then
the A5 is technical?
Yes, exactly. And the A3, Mr. Nelson can speak to that.
Okay, we'll take the A5 at first. Technical amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Okay, on the A3, did...
Yeah, Mr. Nelson wanted to speak to that.
Mr. Nelson, welcome to the committee again.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Lee Nelson. I'm Chief Legal Counsel to the Unemployment Insurance Program. Mr. Chairman, members to the A3 amendment. This is brought because of a little glitch, I want to say, in the law about professional employer organizations and the coverage of officers of the client corporation. And what this bill does is cover those officers so they are paying unemployment insurance taxes on them. It makes it easier for the department to administer the law, makes it easier for the employers to comply with the law, and overall, we support this bill.
And Mr. Chair,
about
I serve on the Unemployment Insurance Advisory Council and was a part of all the discussions all summer and during the interim, and so I concur with Mr. Nelson.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Nelson or Senator Bonoff. So you're a S-stock corporation, and you have three officers that are third partners. Do they all pay workers' comp if this becomes law? Because currently they're over the 20% threshold.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, no. That would be simply at their option. They could elect coverage. This deals with a professional employer organization who takes over the employment of all the workers. And currently, the law does not deal with how you deal with the officer of the client. And this would then cover the officer of the client. So the professional employer organization is, in fact, paying the taxes and covering the worker as their worker. But it is not... covered the example you bring up at all.
So, Mr. Chairman, this doesn't deal with that type of scenario. This is a different situation. I might understand.
Mr. Chairman, that. Senator Scoy, that's absolutely correct. It doesn't deal with that.
Thank you.
And, Mr. Chair, I did say that the First Amendment was technical in nature. There are some parts of it that are not technical that that deletes a section that we had not agreed upon as a council, and so I didn't want to misrepresent the bill. It's not entirely technical. There is a section that removes a piece with regard to family-owned businesses.
Is that the first one we passed, A5?
Yes, yes. So I just want to set the record straight.
Okay, I guess we moved it anyway. So now we're on the, aren't we on the A3 now?
Yes, we are, Mr. Chair.
Senator Scoy, have you... All right with that. Any other members? Anybody? As always the case, if you're in the audience and you want to speak for or against these issues, we want everybody to be heard. So, Senator Bonoff moves the A3 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Now, this is the one I believe deals with some 3M employees that Senator Frederickson talked to me at length about today, and I think
yes,
I understand
Mr. Chair.
It. And
Yes, Mr. Chair, and Senator Frederickson
is here. Oh, he's here.
Chairman, I sneaked in on your committee down in the end of the table.
Okay. Well, you're always welcome, you know that. But do we need any? Why don't you give us a couple words of explanation,
Mr.
Senator Frederickson?
Chairman, members, this is a situation that occurred about a year ago at the 3M plant in New Ulm, where 30 employees were laid off. To make a long story short, the five of them were deemed to have, well, maybe they weren't really laid off. Maybe it was a voluntary leave of absence. And so a third-party administrator said they were not eligible for the unemployment insurance that they had already received. So what this bill would do would make sure that all 30 are treated the same. They've all been paid their unemployment insurance.
Mr. Nelson, you've looked at this and have no objections to it? Or?
Mr. Chairman, all members of the committee, the department takes no position on this bill.
Okay. Any members of the committee have a problem with
Mr.
this?
Mr. Chair, over here.
Yeah. Senator Michelle, excuse me.
I thank you, Mr. Chair. I always like working with Mr. Nelson, but honestly, I couldn't hear you. Did you say you don't take a position?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Michelle, the department takes no position. That's what I was told to say here today.
All right.
What would you like to say if you had your own way?
I just wanted you to say it loudly.
Mr. Chair, he's sitting beside us.
That's enough. We're going to pass this amendment. Further discussion? Senator Bonnef moves the A4 amendment for Senator Frederickson. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails.
Chairman, thank you.
You're welcome. Anything else we should know about the bill as amended? This has been worked on, and it's agreed upon amongst the committee members that you serve on or with.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and it is a wonderful commission, and I appreciate having the honor of serving on it because it does bring people from all sectors together, people from labor, people from the temporary help organizations, a judge sits on it, people from the department, representatives, senators, and everybody works. It's really a good example of people coming together and working through the issues.
Okay. Senator Perry.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonnef, on page 7, under B, top of the page, line 7.4. In just reading this, this is not. Does this allow someone to, if they're receiving benefits, they go back to work and they work for a quarter, they can start receiving benefits again in the same calendar year? Is that how I'm reading that,
Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perry, if you look at the bottom of page 7, lines 31 and the carryover, this is essentially moving it up from the bottom of the page up to the top. That's all it really does. It does put a limitation on it, but all it's really doing is moving it to a better place in the statute. What it also does is puts a limitation of 52 weeks. When an individual applies for benefits, they receive it, and then we call a second account, as if they file any time in the future, it's called a second account, and there are specific requirements to establish a second account, whether it's 10 years later. That's been in current law since 1987. What this does is say, okay, if you're going to file a second account, we're going to limit those special requirements to 52 weeks after your prior account. So it actually works to the benefit of workers because right now, and quite frankly, the department can't administer current law because it could be 10 years later is your second account. We can't really administer that. This brings it down to say if it's 52 weeks within your last account, you have to meet these special requirements. If it's after that, then you meet the general requirements. But the real thrust of it is actually just move from one subdivision to another.
Okay. Where are we at? Are we done with the description of the bill and questions? Senator Bonnef, do you wish to, does this have to go anywhere? Finance? Senator Bonner will move the bill as amended. Apparently all of these have to go to the Finance Committee, is that correct? Or not? Have they done so in the past, Mr. Nelson? Or is it? I don't see why, but I...
Mr. Chairman, members, because it provides for an extension, the first bill which passed last year, this provides for an extension. It does spend a small amount of money from the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund.
All right, we'll make sure. Then we'll do it that way.
So, Mr. Chair, I move Senate File 2895 as amended be passed and referred to Finance.
Okay, any further discussion? Anybody in the audience wish to be heard on this?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Michelle.
Can we get a 2-minute summary from Mr. Nelson on what the status of the Unemployment Trust Fund is, given the economy? Where are we in the kind of the tax ladder that employers are facing? I know there's been some federal action, too, so this might be a good time. I don't mean to stop your bill. Maybe I do, Senator Bonner.
Mr. Nelson,
like that'd be appropriate.
That's an excellent question, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Michelle, the fund is currently about $540 million in deficit. It is going into deficit further and further by between $30 and $35 million a week. It will receive receipts of approximately $400 million on April 30th. But by the time April 30th rolls around, it's going to be $650 million in deficit before it receives additional revenue. We project the fund will exceed $1 billion in deficit by the end of 2011. The fund will, receipts will not match payouts until 2012. At one point in 2012, this fund could be $1.5 billion in deficit. Currently, employers are at the maximum rates set by statute, but their experience ratings are going to be kicking in, meaning more layoffs you have, this employer experience rating portions are going to be in. Employers are going to be paying, in overall increased unemployment taxes are going to increase about $200 million a year for the next 4 years. Currently, in 2010, will pay in a little over $1 billion in unemployment insurance taxes. Okay. By 2014, that's going to be up to $1.8 billion in taxes without any other adjustments. That does not include a projected federal tax increase because we're going to be borrowing for more than 2 years. We expect federal taxes to increase by $400 million on Minnesota employers between 2012 and 2016.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair, Senator Michelle, this is the subject we spent most of the summer and the interim fall discussing, and a couple of different times I recommended and asked for Mr. Nelson to come back with recommendations. So, for example, we could look at the experience rating over a shorter period of time so that those who were doing the layoffs would bear more of the burden and we would be getting that money faster to offset the deficit growing at that rate. It was the will of this advisory council, was the will of the administration not to go in that direction. They felt as though this was happening more as a result of what was going on all over the country. We're kind of in the middle of the pack, and that if we would take the kind of action necessary to actually reduce the deficit, that it would be harder on our business community. Personally, I would have preferred to do that because I think better to bite the bullet and take the action now to have us be in a stronger financial position later. And Mr. Nelson will tell you I did advocate for that each time, and that was not the will of the commission.
Senator, Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we understand that, states are expected, they're currently in about $40 billion in deficit across the states. That is expected to rise to $90 billion that state unemployment trust funds will be in deficit before that starts shrinking. We understand that Congress may well take up the subject in the fall. and they may change some of the federal law terms about paying it back. So they may provide states which do take certain action better loan terms. And so we're concerned. We thought some of the best thing might be to wait to see what Congress does so that we can then meet what's necessary to get better loan terms rather than do something now and then have to come back and either undo it or change what was done. And plus, because there will be tax increases on employers already because of the experience rating, it was just a question of how much employers could bear right now in this economy. Possibly in 2 years or a year from now, things may be different, and we could look at that a little differently. But we thought we'd wait for Congress to possibly do something and then take action in accordance to get better loan terms.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Nelson, so could you describe the current loan terms?
Mr. Chairman, Nelson. Senator Michelle, currently, although it's waived because of the federal stimulus law, states have to pay interest on any borrowed funds. The current interest rate is 4.6%, but that has been waived through the end of 2010. Then if you don't pay it, you pay interest. Then if you don't pay it back within 2 years, you start seeing what actually amounts to an increase in your federal tax, and the amount of that increase then is applied to the loan. But Congress did provide special loan terms back in the mid-80s. They did change federal law temporarily to provide better loan terms. And I've been involved in some national discussions regarding that with the National Governors Association. Is going to take a position, hopefully, that says states which do take action should get better loan terms. And but that's where I say Minnesota, okay, under current law, is faced with about a $400 million federal tax increase over a four-year period, and that amount being applied to the loan.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Mr. Chair, I mean, it's actually kind of amazing to think of what's going on here. We have a deficit in this fund, which is forcing us to borrow from the federal government, which is bankrupt. Right? I guess they're giving it, maybe they're giving us a good deal. We can borrow for nothing right now, but it's kind of an ugly circle, mostly brought on by the economy and the recession, but it sure would be nice to see this on a smoother glide path sooner.
Senator Bonham, did you wish to,
Mr. Nelson?
Yeah,
Mr. Chair, Senator Michelle, that was my feeling. My feeling is, when is it going to stop? When do we say, you know, it's tough, but we don't want to have more debt to the federal government, actually. We want to handle this ourselves and figure out the best way to do that. So, but that isn't what this bill is, and that's a different discussion. So. But I welcome you to come sit at those commission tables and have that discussion.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Nelson, has there ever been, and I should know this, a forgiveness of this, or is it just the interest rates that vary?
Mr. Chairman, just the interest rates. Okay. I might say that in discussion.
I mean, the government's been backfilling a lot of problems out there, and I thought here's one where they're bailing out or helping other places in the economy. Why not this one? But I might be way off on this one. But.
Mr. Chairman, in our discussions with our counterparts in Wisconsin, who are currently $1.2 billion in deficit, and their tax structure will never get them out of deficit. That's their projection. It cannot work in Wisconsin. That's what they're hoping. That's their plan, is a federal bailout, the last I talked to them. They have no plan. They have no idea. It can't get out of deficit in Wisconsin.
Maybe we shouldn't have a plan so we get the bailout money. Just kidding. Senator Perry.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Nelson, what is the current surtax percent right now on the employees?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perry, tax structure is fairly complex. The effective maximum tax on employers is about 10.7% on the first $27,000 of wages paid per employee. So it comes to about just under $3,000 per worker would be the maximum tax an employer could pay. But it varies based on experience. The more layoffs you've had, the higher you pay essentially per worker. The minimum currently is only about $120 per worker. If you've never had any layoffs, you pay a minimum of about $120. But if you are a seasonal business, which is laying people off every year, you'll pay about $3,000 per worker per year.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Perry.
Mr. Nelson, the surtax that was, my understanding, instituted that took effect January of this year. Is that correct, to help for the extension of the unemployment benefits? For an example, in my business, I have my UI that I pay. It's about, I think it's right at 7.9 or 8.2%. But beginning in January of this year, to pay for the extension, my understanding was there's a surtax on what I pay to the tune of 14.3%. Can you explain that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perry, that surcharge has been in place for a number of years, and that actually wasn't in place because of the extensions. That was a change done in the 2002 law, why that surcharge came in. That's fairly complex. I could certainly meet with you to discuss it.
Well, you could use a KISS principle, couldn't you, and explain it?
What happened was the base rate was actually cut, which was a flat rate across the board of 0.1%, was actually cut back in 2002 and replaced with a surcharge of 14%, so that, in effect, it's for those employers who got more layoffs would actually pay a greater portion than those employers who never had any layoffs. So it was just a different way of taxing. And in 2002, it actually didn't increase total revenue, but was simply put the costs on to those employers who bore layoffs. What happened on effective January 1st of 2010 was an increase in the base rate from 0.4 to 0.5. That's because the trust fund was falling, but that was put in the law in 2002. It was going to occur because the trust fund is substantially going down. That's why that occurred. That was automatic.
Mr. Chair, one final. Senator Bonoff, would you just explain the makeup of this commission? I guess I'm interested to find out what organizations were on there.
What about it? The Chamber of Commerce has representation. As I said, there's the judicial branch has representation, the House, Republicans and Democrats, the Senate, Republicans and Democrats have been appointed. Let's see, who else? The cities, the counties, the AFL-CIO, Teamsters, temporary legal aid is there. Trying to go around the table in my mind. Who else
That's
is
good.
There?
Thanks.
You got it. Okay.
Yeah. Is it kind of fair to say that's pretty well balanced?
Very well balanced, Mr. Chair. And as I said, I didn't have much support in my preference. Did I, Mr. Nelson? Each time I'd say, come on, can't we look at, particularly because of the seasonal workers and some of those categories, we know that over and over this keeps happening, and so is it really appropriate that everybody is partaking in the consequence of going into deeper deficit? So.
Yeah, unfortunately, we have over 230,000 people on UI today.
Mr. Chair, one of the things that members might not realize is that we have a far deeper segment of seasonal workers than really anywhere in the country. And so it's just a phenomenon that's pretty interesting when you think about it. And I didn't even realize, people like campaign workers get unemployment insurance. They know the campaigns come to a close. They choose to be on a campaign, and yet they qualify for unemployment insurance. There's those kinds of unusual things that all are a factor.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tomasoni.
All of these figures make you wonder why the governor would veto 8,600 jobs in the bonding bill. But Mr. Nelson, I'm just
I know why.
Wondering why. Because it would certainly bring down, what's too expensive? This is too expensive. That's what's too expensive. Not people not working is too expensive. Mr. Nelson, I had a situation in my district where one of my constituents was getting about $400 in benefits and then had some part-time employment and ended up at $47 for some, I'm not sure what the deal was. It was some kind of an account was recalculated or something. Does this bill help deal with that kind of a situation and make it better? Or?
Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Tomasoni, no, this bill does not address that. Senator Carlson has a bill, which I believe is next, or is listed on the agenda as next up, which will in fact address that. And I'll be speaking about that with Senator Carlson in a moment, but that bill will address that very situation.
Okay, thank you.
Any further discussion on Senate File 2895 as amended? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much, folks. The next one, bill on the schedule is Senate File 3123. This is Senator Carlson. Benefit account requirements for UI benefits. Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I have Senate File 3123, and what it does is it attempts to address and correct a problem that is caused by the interplay between state regular unemployment insurance benefits and the federal extended benefits. Before we go any further and to discuss the actual language, I have the A1 amendment that I'd like to offer.
Okay, well, I think we can adopt it, and you can explain it along with the bill.
Sure.
On the Carlson A1 amendment, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Carlson, on the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, the goal of this bill is to help those who have had a part-time job or were full-time employees using unemployment benefits, and they've already, or they may be taking part in the federal extension benefits, and have an account in their state benefits, and then become eligible for federal, and then do some work and have to start up a new state account. And that state account may be based on their part-time employment, part-time income. And what happens is that, as Senator Tomasoni was explaining, it can be a major drop in benefits. And that major drop is until those benefits are used up, and then they go back on to the federal benefit, which brings them back up to the prior level. What we're attempting to do here is, because you have an account, is to increase the payout of that state account so that you can draw down those benefits and then go back on to the federal benefit. Nobody gets a windfall here. This is money that's already set aside. And it's something that will handle these kinds of problems. In fact, Senator Tomasoni was referring to a constituent who went from approximately $400 a week down to $47 a week, I believe it was, which is, and this is a problem where that person had some, had an employment, had some income, and then their new calculation is based on that lesser amount of income. So, in effect, you could actually say that the person was punished by going back to work, and we don't want to do that. And with me to testify here is Mr. Lee Nelson from Deed, and he can give you this is a complicated bill, but it is simple when Mr. Nelson tells you about it.
Okay, it's complicated but simple. Mr. Nelson, give us a simple version.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I am Lee Nelson. I'm Chief Legal Counsel to the Unemployment Insurance Program. I think Senator Carlson described it very well. What this is attempting to do is not penalize people who go to work. And because of the federal extensions in place, this has become personified. This bill has a sunset date, and it is attempting to mirror that federal extension and take use of that federal extension. An individual will not receive more in total unemployment, state total unemployment benefits. What they will receive is a little faster. Okay. They'll receive a higher won't receive a total amount any higher. So instead of a collecting $200 a week or $100 a week for 20 weeks, they'll receive $200 a week for 10 weeks, using up the same amount of money a little bit faster, and they can go back on that federal extension. And we've seen some egregious cases, Senator Tomasoni's constituent being the most egregious one I've seen, but we see this a lot. And people are literally penalized for taking a part-time job or a temporary job, temporary seasonal job. They're really being penalized. In effect, they would have been better off not working.
Correct.
And that's the criticism here. We're trying to
encourage
them to actually work. So you're not hurt by working. You're encouraged by working. That's what we're trying to do here. Plus, it has to be written to get around some of the federal restrictions. You might say, why doesn't it refer to federal law? Because Department of Labor has said no to an original draft of this bill, so we have to make it fit, and they think this passes federal muster.
Any discussion? Certainly want to encourage people to work, don't we?
Mr. Chair.
Further discussion, Senator Carlson, you might have a thing going here. Don't talk yourself out of it. I've heard what my daddy always said, Senator Bond, if you
stop
know
selling.
This, if you get the order, stop keep quiet, on. Stop, move on. But go ahead. Don't talk yourself out of it. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I will not. However, I have been counseled by committee counsel that I possibly should mention that we don't know if anyone is negatively affected by this. There's a huge number of positive people that are affected by this, but we have not been able to uncover negative effects. There may be some, and we'll still continue looking for that.
You say that, Mr. Nelson, the cost is going to be neutral, in your opinion?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee,
paid out a different
we don't
way.
Believe there's any fiscal impact because an individual is not collecting more benefits. They're simply receiving it a little bit quicker. As Senator Carlson did indicate, I've asked for a more in-depth analysis of this bill because Senator Carlson was very concerned who could be adversely impacted. He wanted to know right down to how many people might be impacted, who they would be, and how much. And we're going to do an in-depth analysis. We think it would be very, very few. The number who would be positively impacted, it just dwarfs the negatives. But he wanted to know how many, who, what, where. And I said we'd get that information for him.
Mr. Nelson, in your opinion, does this bill, they didn't ask for it, does it have to go to Finance Committee? Do they historically, even if there's not a cost or we don't take?
Mr. Chairman, I had to do a fiscal note for the House side, and my thing was that there was no fiscal impact to this bill.
Okay, let's try it that way and not to the Finance Committee, and then if they ask for it, we'll worry about that later, I guess. Any further discussion?
Chair.
Anybody in the audience on this bill? Seeing none, Senator Carlson moves that Senate File 3123 as amended.
As amended.
Be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble, the last bill in the agenda. Senate File 2764, certain domestic partners benefit. Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and I do have an author's amendment, the A1.
Maybe you could explain the amendment,
sure.
Senator, as it's being.
Mr. Chair and members, A1 simply limits the bill. The original bill had two or three provisions, and this confines it to just one provision that has to do with the payment of wages that are due to the surviving member of a couple. Doesn't reach into military pay or workers' compensation as the original bill held. So, Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to present Senate File 2764. And it really has to do.
Maybe we should
move the amendment.
Senator Lance moves the amendment A1. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As is a reoccurring theme with similar bills, this is speaking to the issues of love and commitment and responsibility that occur within families and among committed couples and relationships. two people, they come together, they work very hard to build a life together, to keep a home, to pay their bills together, save money, support each other's interests and careers, raise children who themselves will hopefully go on to become healthy and productive citizens. And of course, as we all know, the inevitable happens, and one of us leaves the earth before the other one does. And there's a corresponding grief and devastation and sense of loss at what's happened. But there's also another side to this, and anyone who's been through this themselves or have parents or close family members who have also been through this, there are a lot of practical and economic considerations that have to be taken into account, not the least of which is how to pay bills, go on providing for oneself, continuing to maintain your home. We recognize in many, many of our policies in state statute, just as a matter of course, automatically, that when this occurs, when someone loses their longtime committed life partner, in this case a spouse, there's an automatic assumption that property is inherited, past wages that are due to the decedent are paid, someone is able to maintain their home, they might benefit from pension, ongoing pension benefits, or the proceeds from a wrongful death decision, insurance beneficiary, et cetera. Because it's recognized that it is in the public's interest, and it is a good public policy, that strong, stable foundations continue on, because they are the foundation of a strong and stable community. But of course, this is not the case for all families. So this bill just seeks to remedy just one of the deficiencies that I described that's in our state law, so that the surviving member of a couple can have the benefit that flows from that commitment that I described earlier, flows from that responsibility that they've taken to establish a long-term and stable relationship, to receive their deceased partner's wages that are due, as happens in legally recognized married couples. The alternative, of course, is that the employer just gets to keep that money. It's one of those most difficult moments in life when there's so much else going on. It really shouldn't be Minnesota law to just heap on to the stress and struggle that a family is going through at this time, creating any sort of indignity at this time of someone's life. And there are many indignities that families like mine have to endure in many aspects and facets and phases of our life, not the least of which are at the end of life. This is a small bill that seeks to remedy just one of those. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll stand for questions.
And the amendment, what did that do? That narrowed it a little bit?
Narrows it just to paid wages due to the domestic partner of a surviving individual. It describes, you know, what a domestic partner is. I would argue that it's a higher threshold in many cases than legally recognized married couples have to meet.
Senator Scheid.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Senator Dibble, I strongly support the bill. I would take it a step further, but I won't bog you down with that. Because I like everything about it until you get to the part that people are not related by blood. So if you had a parent and a child, mm-hmm. or two sisters, I know someone very well, mm-hmm. who lives with her sister. She would be me. And, or brothers who live together and we're not able to share that benefit, even though we rely on one another, mm-hmm. for the house payment and all the expenses of the household. Families just, I mean, we're legally family today. We're literally family, as everybody understands and accepts. And so I just want to say that's the only deficiency, and I strongly support what you're doing. It absolutely has to do with dignity and fairness. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, as a co-author, I am a strong supporter on the bill. And I just was wondering what your thinking is with regard to the definition of domestic partners, because how about the couple that does choose to not be married but has lived together for, you know, 10 years, and where do they fit into this? Opposite sex couple.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm, this bill is designed to solve an existing specific problem that occurs with many, many couples who just simply don't have that option. It's not speaking, of course, to Senator Scheid's situation, and you know, we can go down this path. But you know, for for myself and Richard, simply not an option.
Right.
And, you know, and so this bill does not solve every problem that there is to be solved out there, to be sure. But it does solve a very significant problem.
Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair, I see Ann Kinnaroth is here, and I would hope that she would also speak about why we, you know, what Project 515 is, because I think that is something that everybody ought to understand what the broader context is of that.
Okay, we can hear from you. You're welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ann Kinnaroth, and I'm the executive director of Project 515. And first, we want to thank Senator Dibble for bringing this important bill forward today. But just as way of introduction, Project 515 is a nonprofit organization with the specific goal of ensuring that same-sex couples and their families have equal rights and considerations under Minnesota law. In 2007, the organization identified at least 515 Minnesota statutes that discriminate against same-sex couples. And this bill that's before you is actually part of a larger package of four bills introduced this session called the Basic Protections Initiative. This package of legislation is modeled after legislation recently passed in Wisconsin to allow domestic partners some basic similar rights and responsibilities as their married counterparts. This bill, as Senator Dibble highlighted, would afford one additional basic employment-related right to same-sex couples that are not currently in place. As you saw, the term domestic partner would be inserted into statutes and would allow those domestic partners the ability to receive their partner's final paycheck in the event of the death of their partner in the same manner that is afforded to married spouses. The domestic partnership language I just wanted to highlight is actually a compilation of language used with more than 300 employers, including many of our largest companies in Minnesota, along with the University of Minnesota, all who offer some domestic partnership benefits. And so this is the definition that we believe best represents what is needed in Minnesota. I also want to highlight that the bill doesn't actually change the function of how the law interacts with employment law. It really only expands to whom those functions are offered. I did want to also point out there have been previous testimony in other committees that offering the domestic partnership definition would give same-sex couples benefits without responsibilities. And to that end, I just wanted to clarify that we are not here today to discuss marriage and all of the rights and responsibilities that do go with that legal institution. We are here only to discuss this single basic right that most every opposite-sex married couple takes for granted. And we, on behalf of Project 515, we would state unequivocally on the record that we support imposing upon all same-sex couples all the responsibilities of marriage so long as the commensurate rights and benefits of marriage are conferred as well. So with that, Mr. Shire, I'd be glad to take any questions.
Very good. Senator Latz, how are you today?
I'm fine, thank good. You, Mr. Chairman. I'd be pleased to move the bill.
We have at least one opposition, Tom Prichard from the Minnesota Family Council. Welcome to the Minnesota Senate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Tom Prichard, President of the Minnesota Family Council. I want to speak, we'd like to speak in opposition to the bill for a number of reasons. First concern is we believe that this will inject, by establishing a domestic partner status, you're going to inject confusion and ambiguity in the law. If you look at the definition of domestic partner, it's rather, in some respects, vague and ambiguous. It talks about assuming responsibility for each other's basic welfare, financial obligations, and well-being. And we think it'll open the door to conflicts between individuals, let's say family members and others, who might come in conflict with the person, because this is not the only bill, but a number of other benefits which are being sought after, that there'll be conflicts, legal disputes over whether a person really is a domestic partner and what's, you know, legal rights they have vis-a-vis family members and others. Secondly, we believe that this bill is discriminatory. It was already mentioned in some of the comments, but it excludes family members and other individuals from these benefits and recognition under domestic partnerships. So we think it's discriminatory as opposed to being an issue of fairness. Also, we believe it's unfair to married couples. It was already mentioned that this doesn't, basically you're giving benefits and privileges to individuals without respondent legal responsibilities, which you do have with married couples. And finally, really, this is really an effort to establish a marital type status for same-sex homosexual couples. And that raises the question, why does the state give special status to married couples, a man and woman? I think there are a number of reasons, but one of the key reasons is the benefits it provides for the raising of children and the stable order of society. And we don't think that will, by redefining marriage, we're going to open up the door to all sorts of social problems beyond what we already have. And finally, I think this will open, by establishing a domestic partnership status in the law, you're opening the door to litigation challenging our marriage laws. A number of other states which have had domestic partnerships put in place have seen their marriage laws challenged, and part of the court's reasoning was the existence of domestic partner language, and so they found unconstitutional discrimination by excluding them from marriage. So those are just a number of the reasons we oppose the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Anybody else in the audience like to be heard on this bill? Senator Latz will move that Senate File 2764 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Welcome. I think we're back in Wednesday, and I believe Senator Thomas, so he might have a bill or two for sure. And I don't know who else. Sparks, too.
Are you on Thomas?
Okay. Meeting's adjourned.